Take a deep breath. And sound the dough. Avi, will you welcome us?
Okay. So again, welcome everyone. So happy to have you here. This is just such a gift. Oh my gosh, after so many months of Zoom meetings. There is nothing that can replace this, so... Bless you all for having the courage to come here, really. It's, you know, it's a bit of a step into the unknown, even though we have tried to cover all the bases. And please, if anybody's feeling uncomfortable about, you know, the arrangements and where things are or our proximity to each other, please speak up. I mean, that's something we need to process together and look at together. So... your safety is important, your inner work is important, so we're here to co-create this together. And so please, you know, there's plenty of us around who have been here for a while. If they have questions about the building, at some point I could always do a bit about the history of this house and the Claymont Society. Yeah, don't be quiet. No need to be quiet. So thank you all for being here. So a bit of logistics. You probably saw the big board. Things changed a little bit, so we now have a wonderful chef who's coming in, made this wonderful dinner, and he will be doing lunches. Claymont's doing breakfast, and then Nick does lunches and dinner, and we assist him. We help. We help with the cleanup. We help with the prep. And so there is a sign-up board. Maybe Heather wants to speak to that. That's going to have the instructions. There will be somebody on your shift who's familiar with the process. There are specifics in the kitchen that need to be followed in terms of putting food away. And two things about being in the kitchen is that you should wear a mask and always, always, always wear shoes. No bare feet, socks, ever in the kitchen. And that's mostly for your own safety, but also for the health department. There are regulations around setting up the dishwashing sink, and those things will all be explained as we go along. I don't want to give too much of a data dump tonight because it's a bit much. So this is a big, beautiful old house, and yet it needs to be taken care of. And thank goodness Gary came to the rescue today and fixed the hot water heaters. So we actually will have a lot of hot water. Yeah, there was a bit of a snag, which, you know, that's okay. One thing is that at night, you'll learn where the light switches are. We need to leave some critical lights on, like a couple of lights in here. Turn off the overhead lights, and somebody will... I don't know who are the night owls and who are the early birds, but at some point the house needs to be put to sleep, and some of the security lights need to come on. So we'll work that out as we go along. The other thing is that there is, as I was saying earlier, there's hand cleanser everywhere. Please make sure that you're diligent about washing your hands, sanitizing your hands. There is sanitizing spray in the bathrooms, and we ask that for now, people spray the handles, and then most of that sanitizing spray you can just leave on. If you're uncomfortable with that, you can take a paper towel and wipe it off and throw that away. But most of that is just, it'll dry right on the handle, and then that'll keep it clean. And periodically we'll check in with the room, maybe do some vacuuming, but, you know, we're here as caretakers of this house as well. This has a long history. This is the 200th anniversary of the building of the mansion. Mm-hmm. And this was the year we were going to dedicate this year to the 90 enslaved peoples who built this house. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, COVID came along, and so our in-person gathering has not happened yet, but we still want to honor them with our memory and our love of this house. At least that's how it is for me. I've been here a long time, and I just love this place. So, so there's that. We probably won't have snow, thank goodness. Everybody's room has their own baseboard heaters. There are extra blankets. You need clean towels or anything, just let me know. You know, just don't hesitate to ask. I'm around almost all the time. And let's see, what else? So, and also in the dining room, there's another whiteboard that gives the list of chores that need to be done before and after each meal. So there will be a person on each shift who can guide you with that and inform you. And once, not rocket science, so once you get the hang of it, you'll be right in the thick of things with the rest of us. Anything else I'm missing, gang?
If you have any questions about the food or responsibilities, just come find Nan or Laura or I, and we'll try and keep that off of Deborah and Amy's plate. Yeah, but it is pretty self-explanatory. Once you sign up on the board, if everybody signs up for 4 or 5 times, somewhere around there, and then what you sign up for, the other board she's talking about in the dining room has the specific tasks of that particular position that you sign up for.
The other thing that comes to mind is please don't go up and down the stairs, any of the stairs, in socks. Best to have shoes on. They're old and slippery. They've been cleaned a lot of times, so don't want anybody sliding down those. No riding on the banister, Andrew.
I'll stop doing that.
Too late.
Take away all my fun.
I was going to also add that we decided that the public bathroom for people who aren't staying in the mansion is going to be downstairs.
Right, yeah, thank you.
So if you're wondering, we can show you that. But and then everyone should please use their own bathroom when they come out.
Good, thank you for that.
And then the other announcement is about the library. There's a little serving library in the main foyer here with a bunch of books, Teilhard, Meeting, Kerjip, and you're welcome to sign those out and take your care of them.
And we will be, in the afternoons, walking to the Octagon and doing movements in the Octagon rather than up here. So, make sure you can, and I think tomorrow it might be rainy, but it's about a 10-15 minute walk. It's what?
People can also drive.
Yeah, they can drive. It's a nice walk, but
I mean, it's raining.
It's, yeah, so it's 10 or 15 minutes, depending on how fast you walk. Make sure you go with somebody, because you could end up in the North Woods. It's kind of that way. It's in the
there will be a caravan.
What else? And please, if you have an opportunity, there's a big property map that's in the foyer, and I can also print up some smaller ones if you want to take walks. The only thing I would ask is that we're in the Octagon. You can use the bathrooms in the barn, but please, there is a permaculture internship program going on in there. And so we ask that you don't go into the barn and just kind of wander around. Not that you would, but we're trying to keep that a safe space for the people who are living there. But it is possible to use the bathrooms that are in the Octagon, or outside of the Octagon, in the building. But there are some beautiful places to walk on this property. Those of you who have been here know. There's a 250-year-old oak tree. There's the woods. There's the formal gardens, which have been cleaned up. So take advantage of the beauty that surrounds. It's not only in here, but it's outside of us and with us. So,
We made an ad hoc addition to the schedule. We started reading Beelzebub, a 30 minutes before dinner, and so we're carrying that on. And so at 5:45 each day, we'll be reading Beelzebub. And everyone takes about 5 minutes to read, then we pass it on.
So we're doing that for 15 minutes?
30
or
minutes,
half
a half hour before
okay.
dinner.
Does everybody get a copy of the schedule?
What about the practical work that's asked in the afternoon?
No, that's still there.
Okay.
It's for people
it
who...
It seemed like there was much time after the afternoon teaching.
We got that schedule worked out, though.
And the Beelzebub group meets here?
Yes.
Yeah. We'll take the schedule blow by blow shortly, just so everybody can sort of visualize what's happening.
Yeah, and there are copies out there, but we can bring them in here. Anything else?
Amy, can you tell us what the goal is or the aim you've taken on with this community this year?
Survival. The aim of the community?
Yeah, well, the aim of the group of the attention to the...
The attunement to the higher.
Yes.
Yeah, that was our theme. That is our theme. Has been for quite some time, actually. But the group who was here, everybody's still here, who came, is to set the tone for attunement to the higher. In that it's... We're in the midst, as everybody knows, of a very critical time. And we have, from my sense of it, we have an opportunity to be something that maybe the rest of the world needs, and the rest of the world is not able to provide for themselves. We're not the only ones, thank goodness. There's lots of help in and around us and out there in the world, but that, you know, I think of it as a tuning fork, and we hit that tuning fork and that very fine vibration permeates out. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have an opportunity to do here together, to refine that and send it out. So, and thank you, Cynthia, for coming.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick up right where that leaves off. What is this, favoritism? You didn't record Amy?
No, she's recorded. She's recorded. I'm just making sure
You're
we
just
are
making
recorded.
Sure it's staying
recorded.
You
want to see where the toilet paper is.
Yeah. Nope, everything's there.
If you see me pushing my teacup and trying to plug this down my throat, you'll realize I'm backwards as usual. Good evening, all of you. Welcome. And as usual, we really don't want to overload you with details. You know, that's the usual procedure on opening nights. We want to give you the minimum you need to just make sure you can get through the next 12 hours comfortably. The rest you'll figure it out as we go along. But I want to start to give us basically an overview and hopefully set the tone of what we're about, and then look at some of the major components. So how can I give help? And I suspect that's the question that brought most of us here, that there's a largeness of spirit. And to get here at all, took a considerable measure of risk, a considerable measure of living beyond your own comfort zone. And there had to be things that were more important to you than personal safety or even personal religious spiritual edification that in different times, those kinds of goals could have been assumed. But here, everybody had to make a sacrifice and an effort and operate out of some other piece of themselves in order to put themselves in this place for whatever work is doing. And I think it's that measure. Call it courage, call it mettle, call it altruism, call it a deep sense that our planet is stuck at a place of deep crisis and basically at impasse and doesn't seem to be able to find in any of the traditional wells we're used to quite enough oomph, quite enough breadth of vision and specificity of practice to maybe create or generate a shelf, a little local patch of, you know, singularity that might affect the outcome of it all. We sit a week off from a very critical and certainly traumatic election in which one feels, without saying anything further than that, the forces of good and evil wrestling in a particularly virulent and passionate way. We sense that it has the dimensions of a collective moral crisis, a planetary crisis. Many of us have felt helpless to move it at the level of just the individual things that we have in our grab bag. Polemics don't cut it, talking in your silos don't cut it, you know, getting bent out of shape by anger and futility yourself doesn't cut it. But we know in our heart of hearts that sometimes well-timed, clear, compassionate, and yet impartial, if one knows how to deliver it, where to deliver it from, and in what spirit it's intended, it can essentially yield big results. Or maybe not even big results, but big enough. So it's in that sense that we gather together with these great questions, heavy in our heart, heavy in our conscience. And it's in these moments, I think, that the latent nobility that is in the human soul either comes to the fore or doesn't. So for a long, 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 long time now, like coming on to 40 years, I think, I have felt so strongly that these two hands, my right hand and my left hand, as I've done this work, the Gurdjieff work and the Christian mystical contemplative tradition are inseparable. They need each other, they fulfill each other, and the dynamic between them is extraordinary. It would be simplistic to say that one's got the wings and the other's got the roots, but the profundity in Christianity is the depth and breadth at its finest of its mystical hope, of its mystical vision, of its adoration, of its capacity to receive in tenderness and gratitude, and at its high end to actually incarnate a path of radical love. There it is in its high mystical potentiality. But in the middle ground, it seems to be so rife to be taken over by sentimentality, rhetoric, manipulation. And we watch in this kind of grotesque caricature today how it's the ones that are the Christians that are pushing a social program and a political platform which is diametrically opposed to everything that love and compassion stands for. And nobody even hiccups. You know, so great is the buffer. So Christianity is prone to losing its way, and it's because I believe, and was learned in the Gurdjieff work, that it's because we have so few tools for authentic presence and authentic self-observation. We mistake intensity for clarity, passion for idealism. We watch as we get swept away, or we don't watch and we get swept away. And there are no tools to spot where we get pinned. It's a great missing. Christianity lacks a middle, and it's great weakness. So it has beautiful vision, but there's no real classic path to stabilize it in a person. And 100 years ago, Gurdjieff, looking at the terror of the situation, because it's not just Christianity, it's endemic to all religions, all great devotional paths, with the exception of perhaps the Buddhists, who really try and do it better, that he brought the practices, the techniques, the insights, the actual capacity to touch a different quality of being, to touch it, to stabilize it, and to bring into our work a new way of being present that connected with some things at in energetic bandwidths, at levels of interpenetration and infusion, that just are not heard of in the classic mainstream theologies. So there's a beautiful pedagogy of mindfulness, of waking up, of presence, tied implicitly to a teaching of great devotion and compassion that often goes missing. But the frustrating end in how the work has tended to materialize over all these, you know, decades that it's been in existence, it has this fateful tendency to get over-subtilized and closed, so that groups lock in and say, oh, what we're doing is so, you know, so advanced, so subtle, that you lose the impact. And the tradition has looked more and more now at, you look out at in a fourth way group and it looks just like a church. It's mostly 80-year-old people. And they say, oh, well, how do we get the word out? But, oh, no, we can't get the word out because that would be proselytizing, you know. So it's stuck. And I sensed for a long time that these two parts of the vision, when they fit together, create both ends and means. So I've been working on that for a long, long time, making myself royally unwelcome in both camps. but sometimes you find little bivouacs and places of opening where they occur. So last year, pre-pandemic, but barely so, we began this inquiry into Teilhard and Gurdjieff. These two great visionary teachers of the 20th century, who actually co-inhabited and crisscrossed Paris for a couple of swaths in their life. But since they were traveling in different worlds interiorly, they really never met. And yet, there's something in their visions that seemed to me strangely compatible and congruent, like they fit together. And last year we looked a lot about what that was. And basically in the breadth of the cosmos, in their sense that this is not just this earth, you know, and with God above it, but there's a huge, huge breadth, expanse, spaciousness, and depth to the megalocosmos, as Gurdjieff calls it, that there is a intrinsic planetary intelligence, that time scale is vast. We looked at a dynamism that seems to infuse both of their teaching, a threeness explicitly in Gurdjieff, implicitly in Teilhard, that keeps driving things asymmetrically into what, for lack of a better term, we call the future. And that it doesn't get pinned to either stale or static or retro forms, at least intrinsically. So we tried to look at that forward-moving intrinsic dynamism in both of them, and juxtaposed it with so many modalities in the inner work that are either static or retro-looking. We have to go back to an ideal time that we've lost, you know, and to see that, no, these guys are crashing and blundering on, taking exactly the conditions in which they find themselves to be the conditions in which whatever is to be expressed now is to be expressed. So we looked at that and promised to meet again this year to look at some of the differences. And we are carrying through on that agenda. This wisdom school was not postponed. It's playing out at its regularly scheduled time, you know, several worlds later, and among the very, very first openings for Claymont after everything shut down. So we're doing it, and we're looking at the differences not because the mind demands it, but so much that the difference between these two guys are still points of creative tension and leveraging, that again they mirror, correct, and compensate for each other. And sometimes, as I found as I've been working with the material, apparent differences on the surface actually, when you push deeper, turn into great pools of undetected or underappreciated intimacy, and into what I believe is the real heart of both Gurdjieff and Teilhard. And the hearts aren't that far apart if you take the time and the care to really dive down through the layers and see what lies behind the apparent polarity of Teilhardian optimism and Gurdjieffian pessimism. A whole world begins to open itself up there. So we're going to look at some of these with the idea of not plowing through a tidy sort of schematic, but of really diving deep into what I think are the great gifts that these two great visionary teachers of heart leave us. Gurdjieff's wrenching sense of conscience and Teilhard's extraordinary sense of the personal as the real state of the highest iteration of manifestation. We're going to look at how all this works. But more importantly, we're going to be looking at it within the context of where we are right now in the life of our country, our planet, and our pandemic. Because both men had this huge vision that within this vast scheme of things, human beings had a small but indispensably precious niche to play. That there was some element of our human experience that needed to be transformed, transfigured, and offered back. And when this was done and done rightly, it created a food for for the whole cosmos. And when it wasn't done rightly, malnutrition set in everywhere, and toxicity set in everywhere. And the transformed elements, without pushing too far, because we're going to get into this later on in the week, have to do with the qualities of compassion, courage, paschal courage, I call it, the courage that lives beyond death, altruism, generosity, exchange, gentleness, forbearance. When these things are actually generated out of the marrow of our life and give it back, there's a softening and a suppling of the environment. And when we get where we usually go, frightened, rigid, isolated, self-protective, we create a situation of cosmic malnutrition, toxicity, which then rains down. So the real question is, for me, very simply, if we want to have a chance of, essentially impacting the climate in which our planet holds it is held hostage, it has to do with the generation of some of these missing elements. But not generated by magic or by let's get together and generate some courage, But, that doesn't work that way. But by a quality of how we live each moment with each other and with the situations at hand. And if we find our way to that now, and can somehow hold it together without grasping it, allow it to cohere so that it forms a coherent atmosphere and an energy that's then released like incense into the planet. Who knows? But it is something we can do. The Gurdjieff tradition is particularly good at providing the missing pieces on how this is done in ways that are not funky and sentimental or manipulative. And those pieces have been fastidiously practiced for nearly 100 years in circles, but they've often had a reference of my personal growth. How do I become a conscious man? Well, perfect, I have a sex change. But to generate him on behalf of the collective and as part of the collective. That's what we're going to be focusing on here as a deepest intent. How do we attune to the higher? Indeed. And how do we not only attune to it, but receive it and transmit it? The old dervish gesture. Receive, transmit, turning and turning into the world. So we're going to be, hopefully, a dynamo of that, a vortex. That would be my hope. So, again, some of the obvious, you're all experienced students of wisdom schools or fourth way work, and from that you know that every bit of this is the school. The teaching is not just the classes where information is exchanged. We have three basic daily components in this, aside from, eating and things like that. But we have the teaching, we have movements, and we have practical work. And all of these will be opportunities and avenues to exercise these parts of our being in different combinations, in different environments. We will prepare each morning, as you're used to, with either a morning exercise, which is a staple from the Gurdjieff tradition, or an unprogrammed sitting, which is, of course, what the contemplative prayer tradition works with. We'll go back and forth between the two. The morning exercise is intended to help you hone and bring yourself into that space where this integrative work that we're talking about goes on, both intra in your own being and inter among the group. So these will be the theme as we circulate through the daily rhythm of the activities, and it's pretty much the same activity every day, every rhythm. We are really exercising these combinations. It's in the combinations, and it's in your own response, your like and dislike, your struggles, your joys. It's in all those parts that the teaching happens and the transfiguration happens. So don't make a hierarchy of the most important parts and the least important points. It's all equally important. So just looking at schedule, and if you don't have a schedule yet, they're just right out on the big entry desk there. We start at 7:30. Not uncivilized, unless you're on the kitchen staff, in which place you're probably starting earlier, but I stay out of that part. And that will be in here for a sitting or a meditation. We start tomorrow with you, Amy, leading the exercise. Breakfast following at 8. And did anybody reach a decision about, is that silent? Is it talking? What's the...
We've had silent breakfast.
Yep. Silent breakfast is the habit. And I think that's actually a good habit, because it'll allow you to take the task that's been offered at the exercise, integrate and maintain the state that you've been working with in meditation, and not immediately go into chat. So silent breakfast. Teaching is here, 9 to 10:15. 10:30 to noon is our work period. It's our practical work period. And those of you who've signed up for kitchen duties of the day will be in the kitchen, in various aspects of the kitchen. That's the bulk of the practical work. What else is going on for work teams during that time? Andrew, are you doing a formal gardens thing or anything like that? Or?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So how do people find out what place they're going to be working?
Amy would be point on that.
Pardon?
Amy's probably point on that.
We'll probably meet in the foyer and then...
And we'll get people sorted out in what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at 10:30 then you'll be back in the foyer, figuring you're probably either going to be in the kitchen or outdoors. Okay? And the task, the thing to really bring our attention to and try to be mindful about all day will have been given at the end of the morning exercise, but we'll remind you there. Work has stop exercises in it. You've all done that before. The little bell rings. You stop what you're doing. You collect yourself. You remember the task. You put an end to the tyranny of your automatic life and time, at least for a minute. The teams, remember, will be led more aggressively or less aggressively, depending on who's the leader. If you get Andrew, God help you. But remember that the real purpose of the work, the practical work, is not simply to get things done here, but it is really to invite you to make a conscious connection between the how you're present in the physical world, engaging your body, to look at your automatic behaviors, to really learn how to draw and regroup yourself in the present, vital survival skills in the world where otherwise we get taken into our head 24/7. So the work team leader will be looking not only at the effectiveness and efficiency of the work, but the quality of your presence and the quality, in some cases, of your group cohesion. Are you just all off in your own little space? Or can you maintain a sense of a greater whole as you work in your part? It's up to the skill of the leader of each team, but if you haven't done a lot of practical work, realize that that's an important component of it and give yourself to it. It's real different from the Saturday cleanup at the church. So we then have lunch and a little bit of time off, and then down to the Octagon, which is down at the barn, down at the what was always the more public part of the campus until COVID hit us. It's a wonderful, wonderful space for doing movements. Deborah, do you want to say anything about the movements we're going to be doing in general, or do you want to just wait till tomorrow to spring it on us?
Well, I just wanted to say about coming into the Octagon, and once you've walked down here, driven down, to not come kind of chatter into the space, mm-hmm. and to when you're ready to enter the Octagon, to come in quietly and to take a place on the floor.
Great. All right, so that will unfold, and that will be there with us every afternoon. And then back, there's an afternoon teaching back here, and then a kind of flexi time between 5 and 6:15. The dinner team will be very engaged. The rest of you will have a little bit more downtime. As Matt said, we are going to be continuing the reading of this particularly key section of Beelzebub. We're just about coming through the end of the destruction of the labors for consciousness and the social changes implemented by the most holy and reverend Ashiata Shiamash, wrecked in an instant. That, of course, creates some reverberation. We'll probably then go back and start that section over again, because its relevance to what's going on our planet, it hits you like a ton of bricks. And dinner, and then back here for an evening session, which will be however it is. But remember that the chief business is always observations, self-observations, take precedence over intellectual responses and inquiry in these sessions. If you've noticed something in your work, if the day brought you to any sort of struggle, any sort of seeing, not necessarily resolved, any new sense of presence, those are the things that really most want to be shared in the evening session. There's going to be content for sure. Teilhard is challenging intellectually. Gurdjieff will probably be somewhat more familiar turf to most of you, not only because we've studied him, and the major ideas we're going to be looking at are the more basic and universal, although there will be some new stuff for everybody, I think. But certainly when there are observations that have to do with the content of either of these, they're germane. But do pay attention as we set up the turf in which we have conversation in the evening, when you're asking questions, particularly content and informational questions, that it's not just curiosity, not just head, not just interesting speculations, but actually has something to do with your being able to more immediately ingest and work with the material. So if we keep it there, it won't disrupt. The evenings will have music webbed through them, taken from the repertoire of the Gurdjieff music, and then we'll end in silence. And it's not going to be a straight up silence like we're in a silent retreat. That I know that many of you will want to find quiet places to smoke, talk, build bonfires, and bay at the moon. This is all part of the culture. But let's also keep the general understanding of the whole entering the great silence and realize that the night is a possibility for deeper reflection, and many will want to use it that way. So after we break the evening sessions, let's try to keep a protocol of keeping the main house fairly quiet and having conversations in places in voices that are aware of the whole house and the fact that some people are wanting to sleep and are respectful of the silence. You know, if you could cluster on porches or out on edges or places like that and be mindful in your conversation of everybody in the group, I think we'll find the right balance with it. The final thing that I just want to say before we call this orientation session to a halt is that once again, during this week, we will mark the passing of G.I. Gurdjieff from this miserable planet Earth, October 29, this year the 71st, I believe, anniversary of his crossing over. That it's a thin place. And the one thing I know with absolute visceral certainty is that he hasn't gone away. That whatever level of spiritual attainment he arrived at during his earthly existence, and it was considerable, that he's wielding that individuality from a world beyond and is as tenderly and fiercely protecting as he ever did. And I virtually guarantee that if you're quiet and contained enough yourself in this ambience, you'll meet him. He'll be about. And that the work we do here will be met. So we're going to celebrate that evening in a combination of offerings from the combined rivers. It'll be a kind of Harper's Ferry evening in which the Shenandoah and the Potomac flow together and seek the sea. So any questions, comments, reflections on what we're about?
Question.
Pardon? Yeah.
Well, we have a designated bell ringer.
Pardon?
Well, we have a designated bell ringer for the pauses when we stop to...
Yeah, you know, I haven't bothered with that. I figure that you guys on the little advanced planning team will figure that out and be on it.
Okay.
And probably people are going to be in different spaces, so we may need different bell ringers. But why don't you and Amy and Andrew and Heather sort out how that's gonna play out? Okay. Anything else we need to know? We're an informal enough group that anything that's missing will kind of punt. Someone will figure out how to do it. And part of what's fun in a group like this is that when people are alert enough, they begin to see what's needed and step in. All right. What are you going to lead us in with, Andrew?
Fisherwomen. How about that?
Thank you. begun. We are underway. Good night. Heart's thanks. Rest well. We'll see you here at 7:30. Mm-hmm.